everyone, and welcome back to What the Family Studies. I hope that you all have enjoyed your holidays and have been able to catch up on some well-deserved rest. On behalf of everyone on this podcast team, I would like to wish you the best in 2023. I am your co-host, Laura Hattier, and today I would like to welcome Dubi Preka, a teacher in the Hamilton-Wentworth District School Board who teaches at Saltfleet District High School. Dubi has taught family studies for 15 years, focusing mostly on fashion. Dubi's start to teaching family studies was unique, as she was not qualified and had never sewed before. Through some bumps in the road, Dubi has learned to approach teaching fashion through the lens of a sewing novice, which has helped with shaping most of her practice. Dubi has also been an author of various educational resources, including A Guide of Managing Fashion Labs through Offshia and The World of Fashion Teacher Resource through Pacific Education Press. Her passion is equity, and she currently assists educators with culturally relevant and responsive pedagogy. In her free time, she volunteers with Boston Terrier Rescue Canada. So we have some learning goals for today. First of all, we want to learn more about Dubi and her journey with teaching fashion. Next, we want to learn some of the challenges that Dubi faced when navigating the fashion curriculum. And we also want to learn the important considerations that teachers of fashion need to think about. Lastly, we want to learn more about Dubi's current work, including her contributions to Offshia. So let's get right into it. Dubi, can you tell us a bit about your path to becoming a fashion teacher?
Okay, yeah. So in the biography, it mentioned that my path was unique. Maybe it isn't unique. I felt like it was, but I know that there are some people who have been kind of thrown into the family studies world without the qualifications. But I remember this was at the end of my first year teaching. My principal told me that the only position that they had for the next year was a family studies teacher. And so with an English degree, I didn't feel prepared for the role, but I really wanted to stay at the school that I was at. And so I thought, you know, is teaching English more important to me at the moment, or is staying at Saltfleet more important to me at the moment? So, you know, I reminded myself that at Saltfleet, my first assignment was actually business and history. So out of my subject area as well. So, you know, I knew I could really tackle anything that they gave me. So I accepted the role for family studies. And it was when I was told I was teaching fashion that I was panicked. And I will admit there were some tears, not in front of my principal, but I was scared knowing that I would have to learn how to sew, and not just learn how to sew, but teach students. I dedicated my summer to learning how to sew, and it was quite successful. And so I would say after my first month that next year, when I started teaching family studies, I was certain that I never wanted to leave family studies. And so I fell in love with the subject area, and I have not been out of it since.
That's amazing. And I feel like very relatable. I definitely am kind of hesitant to teach fashion. It's not something that I'm passionate about yet. I'm much more passionate about nutrition, but it's interesting that you weren't even in family studies at all to begin with, and then asked to teach fashion. Luckily, you had the summer to kind of prepare, but I would be definitely stressed out. It's good that you tried it, because you would have never known, and now it's something that you enjoy doing. As a teacher new to fashion, I'm sure there were a number of challenges that you faced. Can you maybe share some of those and share how you overcame them?
So I would say now I'm, you know, not new to fashion, but I still don't feel like a very experienced person in sewing. And those of you who do know how to sew would understand this. So people who have been introduced to sewing at a young age or have been doing it for so many years, you end up with this natural ability to kind of figure things out. And I still feel as though I don't have that natural ability. And as a teacher, I have to, you know, with cooking, things just come naturally and I can figure anything out. With sewing, I'm still very perplexed by it. So I still come into this problem sometimes. And it's when a student wants to veer off and do some big project that's beyond my capability, I always panic. So I never say no, because I do think that, you know, students should explore beyond what you give them. I'm always honest with students. And I tell them, I don't know everything, but I can help you figure it out. And so the way that I overcome this whole idea of, you know, how do you alter this dress from being an A-line to a pencil skirt, is I sit down and I talk them through it. I ask them what they think. I've consulted with other people who know how to sew better than me or who are more experienced, but I also get the student to research as well, because there's so many resources out there to help students figure out ways to add on to projects or to alter projects. But I do know that me just staying honest with students to say, you know what, I'm not 100% certain right now, but let's do this together and figure it out. It's been good and it's been rewarding, and learning together with your students is always great. But I will tell you something that I figured out really early on that's been helpful. So anybody who's teaching fashion will have the same concern, like how to effectively teach 30 students how to sew, or for example, how to read a pattern. And I know that all summer when I, you know, was thinking I have to teach fashion, I kept thinking, how am I going to teach this to 30 students? Like, I can teach this to myself. So I do want to stress the importance of making sure that you appeal to all the types of learners in your classroom. It's this idea of, is there a resource bank that students can turn to when you're not available for them? Because there's one of you and 30 of them, and you're not going to be available. So some of the things that I've done is I make sure that I always offer 4 methods of instruction when completing a sewing task. So I've created these booklets, and it's sewing projects, and it's pictures, and not even sewing projects. It could be just sewing techniques or lessons. But I have these little booklets that have pictures of me doing the task, so the visual learners can get those pictures. But I also have written instructions with pictures, so the text-based learners have their learning style address. And I also created a YouTube channel, so also the visual learners and the auditory learners can benefit from that. So there's still pictures and then written instructions, but then there's also me doing the task. And another thing that's been really effective too is I call it my help center, and it's literally just me sitting at a desk, but students can approach me sitting at this desk instead of me running around the whole classroom. They approach the help desk, and then they can see me in real time demonstrate something and provide verbal instruction. So I tackled that fear really, really early on. And that's what's helped me be able to be successful as a fashion teacher and to alleviate a lot of the worry.
I definitely feel like I can just imagine the not being prepared and running around the classroom trying to help everyone. And it's like you can't even fully finish helping one student before you're interrupted. So it's definitely good to be prepared and have all those resources. And it teaches them too to like try to solve problems themselves before asking for help, even though it's totally fine to ask for help. But yeah, like you said, there's 30 of them and one of you. Those were just great challenges because I can imagine students being very ambitious with what they want to sew right off the bat. And that would stress me out too, because I would be like, well, I don't want to discourage you from being creative, but I don't necessarily know how to do this either. So great way of dealing with that by working with them and looking things up together, but knowing that it might not turn out exactly how they're planning. Can you also maybe share some of the major considerations that you keep in the back of your mind when you select projects for your fashion class? I know it sounds like you've kind of give like choice, but do you have any major assignments that you continue to give that you've kind of considered over the years?
Yeah, so this came with time and experience, but my 3 main principles are keep it simple, be inclusive, and think of budget. I remember being so what I thought was ambitious at the time, but now I just think, I don't know actually what to call it. I was being silly in the thought that like I wanted these like big impressive projects so students would be so excited and love what we were doing. And then I realized that it's not the harder or more advanced the project that gets them excited. It's when students feel comfortable and competent that gets them to buy in and love your course. And I made mistakes in my first year, like I thinking like students were so frustrated. And it also like it didn't just go away from my keep it simple, but it was the think of budget. And so I basically ran out of budget. And if students had to buy their own fabric, it was so expensive. So anyway, for keep it simple, keep in mind that, you know, students, anytime they're learning something new, a lot of them have that self-conscious feeling. And so you want them to make sure that they feel confident when they're building their skills. And so projects, like I do a shoulder bag to start. And a lot of times when I'm teaching sewing, and it's a very simple shoulder bag, students really like it because it has very few seams, but in the end, it's very functional too. So I see them carrying it around. They have their books in it. Some of them say, oh, I gave it to my parents as a grocery bag. And so they like it because it's a project that they were able to complete with little degree of difficulty, but it's also them not having to screw something up entirely, because the more complicated it is, there's a greater chance that a student's going to screw something up. So it's a confidence builder. And so keeping it simple, I just gave you one example, but the reason why I like this example is because my next one is be inclusive. So when choosing projects, like I always ask myself, will this exclude anybody? You know, you have to keep things in mind, like gender, culture, religion, a student's ability, their body shape, or just the issue of body image, and even, like I mentioned before, budget. So you don't realize this when choosing a pattern, because I just look at it, I'm like, oh, this is cool, and this looks pretty simple, but it's not going to fit all of your students. And I've run into that where my students are looking at the patterns and they're measuring themselves. And I'm like, oh no, this actually doesn't fit a lot of my students. So the idea of, you know, making sure that your projects aren't gender specific or perceived to be gender specific, because, you know, you can call something a purse, but if you call it a bag and make it a crossbody bag or over the shoulder and it can be altered in different ways, then people don't feel like you're pigeonholing something into one area. And another one I've learned too is modesty is a big thing as well. And so, you know, you might think, oh, making a tube top is so easy and it takes little fabric and it's little seams. That's so great. But who in your class would be comfortable wearing the tube top? Some might, but not everybody. So you just have to have that in mind as well. Another thing too is when keeping it simple, time is a precious resource as well. So if something's complicated, it's also going to take a lot of the time in the class that can be spent learning new skills or exploring new sewing projects. But if you're giving something complicated, or if you as the teacher can't even figure out the pattern, you can just sit there for hours and realize that, you know, that time could have been spent more effectively somewhere else, you know, in a simpler task. And then thinking of budget too, this is the last consideration that I have, but for some, it might be the first thing to consider, because whether it's a school budget or a student's personal budget, it is the main component when planning, because that's what sets your limitations or gives you the freedom to do certain things. And so, you know, consider projects that don't take a lot of fabric. Because if students must purchase their own fabric because budgets change or are different in various schools and school boards, you're going to want them to be able to afford to actually sew the project. So another good strategy that I've used to save money is to actually make baby clothes. So students are still learning important techniques, but on a smaller scale. And so I've taught them, you know, how to gather a skirt. So instead of making a skirt, you know, that can fit an adult, you're still learning the same technique on a baby outfit, but it's a lot less fabric. So I've noticed that that's been helpful, and students have liked it too, because then they can put this baby garment on like a stuffed animal. They can give it as a gift. Some of them dress up their pets, like that kind of stuff. So it's been good as well. And one other thing that I've been doing to save money is I've been doing projects that I can make the pattern myself. So it could literally be like a few pieces of paper, you know, that are various measurements that students can kind of trace and piece together, as opposed to going to a fabric store and buying like 30 of the same pattern, which can get expensive. So yeah, those are just a few of my techniques, but keeping it simple, being inclusive, and thinking of budget.
You said a lot, but they were such good points. And I like how you categorized them into like different areas. I totally agree with keeping it simple because, well, for me as a teacher, I would want it to be simple, but I feel like students just get so easily overwhelmed anyways. And they would have so many more questions and they'd just get frustrated because you can't always be there. So it's nice when they're able to figure it out themselves because, like you said, it boosts their confidence. My worry would be the same starting out. I would think, like, is this project too lame? Like, are they going to think it's too simple? But I've realized that even in foods classes, some of the recipes that I want to do with the class are way too ambitious. And again, it ties into budget too. And I'm quickly realizing how important the budget is and how fast things add up. I've spent so much of my own money on my course and I only have one class. Would you say that it's too complicated to give students choice within those simpler kind of projects? Like if you were to do like a tube top or a bag and they could choose, or do you think that's getting too complicated?
No, I think that's an amazing question, actually. I appreciate that question. So the giving choice for a new teacher, I always say it's survival sometimes when you're new. So do what you can do as a new teacher to sewing. Teach the students the things that you feel comfortable. But over, you know, a couple of years, you're going to build on your own skill level. And then you're going to have a bank of things that students can do. You know, for example, like the shoulder bag, I was like, okay, everyone has to make the shoulder bag because I learned how to make the shoulder bag. And you know, it's been successful. But after that, I was like, okay, well, I have a shoulder bag, or I have like this zipper kind of pouch thing. Some students call it a zipper clutch. Others call it a pencil case. And so I'm like, okay, I can offer the shoulder bag or I can offer the zipper bag. Another thing too is you can offer the shoulder bag, but then you can say now there's the shoulder bag or the crossbody bag, and the crossbody bag can have a flap or not a flap. And so it's this idea of, you know, building on your resources. And you might be like, oh, look, I've learned how to sew five things. Students can choose three of these five items. Some people are like, well, I can sew 20 things. So you have more to offer those students. But I would say choice is always important for, you know, keeping in mind like culturally relevant and responsive pedagogy. But choice can also be based on size. It can be based on fabric. It can be based on a little bit of a style variation as well. So it doesn't actually have to vary for the project if the teacher themselves doesn't feel comfortable, you know, with their skill level right at the beginning. But choice is always good because then students feel like they have a voice, but your choice can vary based on a lot of different things as well.
Right. I also love the baby clothes idea. I'm thinking about that too. And like the smaller scale saves money, but it's also nice because then you're not having to worry about the size to fit their bodies and that whole issue. So I don't know. The baby clothes sounds really fun.
It is. They like it. They like it very much.
Yeah, that would be an interesting one. Okay, so over the last few years, I heard that you've been working with students in a graduated program. I know you talked to my class when I was in my teaching education. So can you tell us a little bit more about this experience and how teaching family studies has prepared you for that role?
This year, I don't have the graduated support program, but I did have a good 5 years with the graduated support program. So what the program is, it involves teaching students with various special needs. And the goal is to gradually prepare students to function in daily life with limited support. So it's like gradually taking away the assistance or support that students may have needed to try to help them function independently with basic daily living skills. So family studies prepared me so much because our subject area surrounds life skills. And so some of the topics I've taught my students were about food safety, sanitation, hygiene. So basic hygiene, but then also hygiene when it, you know, surrounds food. I've taught them sewing and mending techniques. We've done things with working with children. And we've also done budgeting, which also kind of lent itself to us grocery shopping. So I would do field trips where we would go to the grocery store, but the budgeting helped because we would look through flyers, learn how to use food comparison, like price apps. Also the emotional and social skills, which is covered a lot in the family studies curriculum, and things such as conflict resolution. So like there's a strong correlation between family studies and what graduated support requires. And so since graduating from the program, a lot of my students actually have gotten jobs or volunteer positions at kitchens or grocery stores, and some even volunteer at various daycares. You can see how there is a strong connection between the family studies curriculum and what the graduated support program aims to do.
Oh, okay. Is that through like the school board as well?
Yeah, it's just another course. And so the limit of students in a graduated support class is 12. So the maximum I would have is 12, which is really good. You know, with teaching sewing, we did some really, really great things. And my nerves were, you know, less peaked because I only had 12. So I felt like I could monitor the safety a bit more, because anyone knows when you have a full class, you know, safety, of course, is always at the forefront. But with 12, I felt like I was able to do a lot of great things.
Thank you for sharing about that. I also heard that you were a writer and developer on some new fashion safety resources through AFSCHEA. I think they were released in the fall. So could you tell us a little bit about that? Why did you decide to become involved with that project? And what was maybe your biggest learning as being a part of that?
So for the project, one of the main things was one of my mentors named Michelin was a lead on the project. So that, of course, piqued my interest because anything that she works on, I kind of like to be nosy and kind of poke my nose in there. But I also, when looking at the project, I thought, you know, I could be involved in this. And like, why would I want to? Because anytime you commit yourself to something, you have to think, okay, why am I going to do this? Is it worth my time? And I don't say that in a negative way, but we all have to prioritize. And I thought, you know, safety in any family studies class is so, so important. So for me to be part of this project, it means that I would be, you know, having an impact on a lot of teachers in this area of safety, but also one of my main things is the learning I could do for myself. So that was super important. And, you know, anyone who teaches a subject area that has safety as a component knows that adequate safety knowledge and resources is essential. So I knew that being a part of that project would be really good for me and for other teachers. So I think another important factor, just even for anybody who is interested in getting involved in writing, is I think it's really important for educators to continue their professional learning, but also to contribute when they can to shared resources. So I know I've benefited from other people's writing, but I do think that it's a shared responsibility for all educators when they can to share their knowledge, because I've benefited so much from asking people, can I look at some of the resources you have? I've gone to the Austria website and downloaded some stuff for myself. And so when I'm able to, it's really important, I think, for me to give back as well, because then people can also access those resources. So, you know, I do really think that having a bank of resources to help guide and planning and highlighting things, such as safety for teachers, is important. And you had asked me like what my biggest learning was here. And that came from my writing partner, Heather Bamford. This is the first time I've worked with Heather, and she wowed me every single day. Like anytime I met with her, I was just like in awe of her expertise. And so teaching fashion for 15 years, you know, I thought I had my craft like pretty down pat. And it was after learning from Heather that I was like, wow, like there are so many teaching strategies that I could use. And, you know, things about tools and equipment that I was like, I had no idea what that tool was for. Like, thank you, Heather, for introducing that to me. But also there are safety things that I hadn't even considered. So for 15 years, like I wasn't touching on, you know, some things, and not that I missed a lot of stuff, but you know, she was able to open my eyes to a lot of things. And also the idea of digital tools, like that's always been an area that I've lacked in. And so learning about, you know, the digital options for students and teachers was really beneficial to me. And I've said it before, but, you know, I do encourage anyone who's given an opportunity to be on a writing team to take it, because learning from colleagues really opens your eyes to so much stuff that you might not have even been aware of before.
Thank you. Would you say that if you are kind of new in this field, you still have things to contribute to something like that? Or do you think you would wait a few years down the road after you've taught?
You know, I think it's interesting because a lot of times people think because they're new, they don't have as much to offer. But I do think that any stage in someone's career, they have something to offer. Like a lot of times, you know, me teaching for 16 years, there are some things that I don't consider. Like I forget the whole idea of being new to a classroom, or like I've been in my same classroom for 15 years. So I think about like the fashion classroom setup, and I don't realize this. Like some teachers start with like 3 sewing machines and they don't have sewing tables. That's a perspective that I don't consider, you know, when I'm planning or helping people plan. But no matter what stage you are in your career, your input is valuable, because we're all teachers and we all have a unique experience. So I really like that question, because I want anyone who is listening to know that no matter what stage they're in their career, they do have something to offer.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much. And is that resource available for Austria members only, or is that a free resource for anyone?
So that resource is available to anybody, and it's on the Austria website, and there is a section for free resources and it can be downloaded or viewed there.
Awesome. That's great to hear. I'm definitely going to look through that as well myself and share it with some of my friends. Thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. We are going to do a rapid fire questions section, which isn't necessarily related to the interview. So it's just some random questions that I'm going to spit out at you, and you just have to answer them as quickly as you can. No stress. It's just for fun.
Okay.
Are you ready?
As ready as I can be.
Okay. Did you make any New Year's resolutions this year? You don't have to share what they are.
Yes.
You did. Okay. What time of day are you the most productive?
Morning.
Okay. Same with me. Did you have a favorite teacher when you were a student?
Yes. Mr. Spira.
And what grade was that in?
Well, all through high school, and it was science, and I quit science partway through, but I still loved him.
Well, that's awesome, because sometimes you don't like a subject, but you love the teacher, and it makes it so much easier to let that subject grow on you at least a little bit. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would that be?
In Hamilton, Ontario.
Really? Okay. So you already live in Hamilton.
No, I live in Oakville, and oh. I was ripped away from my hometown. So I would live there in a heartbeat. I keep telling my partner that I'm headed back there at some point.
So you're a homebody like me.
Yes.
And what was your favorite sewing project that you've ever done with your students?
That is hard, because my favorite sewing project might be different than their favorite sewing project. We did pillowcase dresses one year, and we ended up donating them. And so it was kind of like a, you know, a donation type of project. So that was kind of fun, because they all got to make a pillowcase dress, and then we ended up donating it for children who needed clothing.
Oh, that's so nice. What is a pillowcase dress?
Yeah, so it's a very simple dress with very simple seams, and you can take a pillowcase and you essentially, in just a few seams, transform it to be like a cute little dress that a little child could wear.
Okay, I'm going to have to look that up on Pinterest.
Yeah, oh yeah, you'll find lots of ways to get that done.
Well, thank you so much for coming and joining us. First podcast episode of 2023, kick off the year. I'm sure your words of encouragement and your advice will help many new fashion teachers out there gain some confidence. I feel like a lot of people are scared to teach fashion, not necessarily just because of the sewing. I mean, that's a huge part of it, but just the equitable piece and trying to, you know, make sure that you're not offending anyone with what you're choosing. And it's a lot. So thank you so much for offering your advice and your knowledge. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of What the Family Studies. All links, resources, and social media platforms mentioned during today's episode can be found in the show notes. Remember to subscribe to be notified when we release new episodes. What the Family Studies is brought to you by the Ontario Family Studies Home Economics Educators Association. Special thanks to our producer, Micheline Gallant, tech support and podcast editor, Cassandra McEachern, and our co-hosts, Catherine Murphy and Laura Hattier.